Hey there, if you're listening to this and you support us on Patreon, you can hear it via the Patreon page ad-free. Listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we have Kurt Vile performing live at the Goose Island Brew House. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kot. But first, Jim and I have two new albums to review by Amanda Shires and Nova Twins. That's a little bit of the title track, Take It Like a Man, from the new Amanda Shires album. Amanda Shires, she has had quite a career. You know, she gets the name gets thrown around, the Queen of Americana, and all these kind of, attachments to what she's done career-wise. She has had a distinguished career, a couple of decades long, where she started out as a teen in the Texas Playboys, a very accomplished fiddle player
Bob Wills
as a young
group,
age. Yeah. So, and sort of, you know, made her a reputation as an instrumentalist on the fiddle, and then grew into a larger role as a prominent singer and songwriter, originally out of Lubbock, Texas. Her first solo album appeared in 2005. She's been a member of the 400 unit with her husband, Jason Isbell. She formed the High Women with Brandi Carlile and Maren Morris and Natalie Hemby, sort of a corollary to the Highway Men, the super group, the country super group of the 80s. So Amanda's been busy. She's been putting out a series of solo albums. The 2018 album, To the Sunset, sort of expanded her sound. And now we're going to find out where she's going next with Take It Like a Man. Here's a track from the new album. It's sort of buried at the end, but... Jim and I both think it's a sleeper track that should be heard. My Own Galaxy from Amanda Shires on Sound Opinions.
I am my own galaxy. The desert, the dark, the singing dust. I steer the stars by my own volition. Still I get the laundry folded and most all of the dishes done. I keep a running grocery list and I get the dinner on. I know where the bodies are buried. I know where the candy's hid. I dream of a life. I dream of a life. And that's as far as I get.
That is My Own Galaxy by Amanda Shires. It is the unlisted ending track, the bonus 11th track on Take It Like a Man. An album, Greg, that Amanda wasn't even sure she would ever make. Part of her, after 2018's To the Sunset, said, I'm just going to be a painter now. I don't know. I might be done with making my own music. But instead, she decided she had another album in her. You know, Greg, I'm a huge fan of Amanda and everything she represents. And at the risk of having her slap my face the next time we run into her, I gotta say, this album just lets me down, with the exception of My Own Galaxy. Mm-hmm. That is where you get the fire and brimstone Amanda Shires that she brings to the 400 unit, that she brings to the High Women, that she has brought to the best moments of her previous six albums. This one is an attempt to kind of make a Dolly Parton record, but without the Dolly charm, because Amanda is a serious lyricist. And, You know, they're at a point, Amanda and Jason, her husband, that I think every marriage hits, where the nonstop compromise occasionally wears. But that is what a marriage is. It's compromise. And, you know, that title track, Take It Like a Man, she's imagining going out and tomcatting the way so many men do. What would it be like if I stepped out of the marriage and had an affair? The key line is killer. I know the cost of flight is landing. But the overproduction, you know, the operatic approach to Take It Like a Man, we have bits and pieces of like Burt Bacharach orchestration.
Why is that bad?
Well, I know I was praising Julia Jacklin's Burt Bacharach, Dionne Warwick kind of strings just a couple of weeks ago when we reviewed that. But that's like recorded in a garage, all right? You know, this is got way too much sheen on it. I wish the whole album was My Own Galaxy.
Well, agreed that My Own Galaxy is a terrific track. It highlights all her strengths, I think.
Yeah.
But I think Amanda was getting a little tired of being pigeonholed as Americana, even though Americana is a wide umbrella. I think she wanted to branch out. I think she views herself as a songwriter and an arranger and somebody who can, in fact, not be held in by any kind of boundaries. And this one really blows out the doors. I personally love the sumptuous orchestration on Hawk for the Dove and Take It Like a Man, the first two tracks on the record, where she sort of blows it out.
I'm coming for you like a hawk for the dove.
I almost hear it like if Roy Orbison were to make a country record, this would be the kind of thing you'd hear. I thought it was very dramatic and not melodramatic. And then the middle part of the album is just devastating. I'm not a big fan of every track on this record. I think Empty Cups doesn't quite do it for me. That's probably the most Dolly Parton-esque track on the record. But I think the subsequent two tracks where she does talk about, you know, a relationship fraying, Don't Be Alarmed and Fault Lines, those are really amazing tracks. I think they're really well done, low-key and beautiful, and at the same time heartbreaking.
Don't be alarmed. Don't look away. Somebody's heart breaks every hour, every day.
And then the album gets friskier at the end, you know, where she does talk about, you know, having these, you know, relationships. What if I want to have a one-night stand, she's asking at one point.
Right. About the relationship.
And, you know, and then that's the license you have as a storyteller, as somebody who's talking about adult relationships. You know, whether it's she's speaking autobiographically, I don't think she is, but I think she is talking about a broader sense of a woman who is an adult and talking about, you know, relationships at that stage of her life. I think she's constantly growing as a songwriter, constantly surprising us of what she can bring to the table. I think it would be a damn shame if Amanda Shire stopped making music like she's hinted at.
I agree with that. I just wish the next one would be a little rougher. That is a little bit of the track KMB, the initials, by Nova Twins from their album Supernova, the second of their career, Greg, after a series of EPs, a career that started out around about 2016. This was a great suggestion that we tackle this album from Alex Claiborne, our producer. Nova Twins, I initially thought, oh, pop duo. Oh, no. This is metal. This is metal by women of color. I can't think of many things that Alex and Tom Morello would agree on, except both of them are apparently huge fans of Nova Twins. Tom, being a genius guitarist in the metal forum, speaking often about how people of color are marginalized in that genre. And in all of their interviews, guitarist vocalist Amy Love and bassist Georgia South, who are Nova twins. Talk about that as well. Love, born to an Iranian mother and Nigerian father. South grew up in Southeast London. They met and became close friends when both of them moved to London and formed this partnership to deliver some heavy metal. Getting a lot of attention in the UK, shortlisted for the 2022 Mercury Prize for this second album, Supernova. Let's play a track from it, and we'll come back and give our reviews. This is Nova Twins with Cleopatra on Sound Opinions.
Cleopatra from the new Supernova LP from Nova Twins. That track we played at the very top as we introduced the band, right?
KMB.
KMB, Kill My Boyfriend.
yeah.
You know, it is as advertised. They're a hard rock / heavy metal rock duo. I mean, they you know, there's a lot of attitude. Cleopatra just sort of, you know, lays it on the line. There's no fussing about in terms of attitude and swagger that these two young ladies deliver.
You know, one of the great women of color in all of history, showed up the Roman Empire, no less.
Exactly. But that track, KMB, struck me. It's like the fourth track into the record, and I'm going, wait a minute, this sounds like a... There's a little bit of a TLC vibe, you know, kind of that 90s R&B vibe going through the song. And I'm going, you never hear a traditional metal band or rock band sort of reference those kind of things. They're definitely coming at it from their own unique perspective, and that's what I like about them. They're not trying to compete. They don't want to be Zakk Wylde. They want to be their own thing, you know. And they're absolutely doing it on this record in particular. I personally like metal that has more of a stoner fuzzy vibe to it. This is a little more polished than that. But the two of them come across so persuasively in terms of the way they deliver that punch in a variety of ways. They're you know, they rap, they touch on R&B, they also have an intensity that can rival any metal band in business. But they don't stay in one place over and over again. This is a pop album sort of in a metal box, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're making
yeah.
songs that are super catchy, but they're hard-hitting as well. It's, you know, the concision of the songwriting is impressive. That, to me, is the key to what they're doing right now. And whatever they're doing, I think they just keep getting better at it.
No, all the songs are 3 minutes or under. It's none of the wank heavy metal, endless
solos or
thing,
whatever.
You know?
Right.
And if Morello with Rage Against the Machine posed the question of what if a metal guitarist tried to duplicate the sonic collages of Public Enemy, right? I think what they're doing is bringing in elements of EDM, really kind of going back to Detroit techno at times, a little bit of hip-hop. As you said, TLC, R&B, you know, all of these influences that they know and love, and yet it is still metal. There's enough on here for any 13-year-old sitting in the bedroom trying to master Tasty Licks,
right?
And yet there's also enough here that you can play the songs and enjoy them as pop songs, which is, you know, that says to me that's where Alex got her fondness for this band. You know, great stuff. I'd love to see them live. I'd love to get out of the house and start seeing more bands live,
That's right. So that's what we thought of the new albums from Amanda Shires and Nova Twins. And now we want to hear from you, our listeners. Share your thoughts in a voice message at our website, soundopinions.org, and we may play it on the show. Coming up, we're going to head into the Goose Island Brewhouse for a live session with Kurt Vile. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions.
And we are back. We are so happy to bring you another live event after our long COVID-induced time away from live tapings, live music in general. This time, we've got Kurt Vile making a return to the show for an acoustic performance recorded at the Goose Island Brew House in Chicago. Since he was last on the show in 2013, way back, Greg, on episode 386, he has really solidified his place in the music world. People were chomping at the bit to come to this live taping.
Yeah, that's right, Jim. We had a great full house for that one. And, you know, between his solo albums and collaborations, like the one that Kurt did with Courtney Barnett in 2017, he has been finally honing this observational and introspective songwriting that he is so well known for, while continuing to grow in stature, becoming a bigger name incrementally throughout the decade. His 2022 album, Watch My Moves, marked a big shift for him as he moved from Matador Records to Verve. We started our conversation by talking about that move.
Yeah, I'm stoked to be label mates with the Velvet Underground and Stan Getz.
That's good company.
Yeah.
A pandemic record. You've said in a couple of interviews, Kurt, it was good for you in some ways, not that the world shut down, but that it got you out of that record, tour, nonstop grind that you were on.
No, it's true. It did. I will say, though, I had two different sessions at the very end of my touring cycles.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't had those, you know, before times, pre-pandemic times, I probably would have felt way more insane. But because I had some good stuff in the can, I was confident. Because my plan was to build a home studio and all that stuff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And to take it slow at home. I could feel in the atmosphere even before we knew there was a virus, you know, some sci-fi virus. I could feel in the atmosphere that it was time to hide anyways. But, yeah, here we are.
It gave you a real chance to be a dad, you've said.
That for sure, which I've been a dad for 12 years. And I've always been a good dad, but, like, people would always ask, you know, what's it like having to tour all the time? I was like, well, it's just like anything else, and then I'm excited to come home, but it actually did make a huge difference to be there all the time.
I have a daughter. Greg has two daughters. You have two daughters. The face on the cover of the album, your one daughter, is that look that we know. Dad, what do I have to do this for?
It's funny, though, because it looks that way, but she was stoked to be there for sure. It just happened to be the shot, you know.
It's a great look.
And it's pretty funny too, because there's a promo clip of like us actually taking that shot that made the record, and I'm like, should I wear the hat on my head or not? You know, with the mask. And they're like, it looks good. And then I felt pretty bad because it shows them like sort of posing, and they both just look terrified. They're both like this. I couldn't see it because I had a mask on, but I didn't.
Well, they had chosen.
I didn't think they were.
Is this the story? They chose the alligator mask as your Halloween costume?
My youngest daughter did, yeah, Delphine. She kept being on my butt about what am I going to be for Halloween?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because for most of the Halloweens I missed, you know, from being on tour, but there were two in a row that I got to go to. Yeah, and that's when the album cover was due, but like when I went out for Halloween with them, I just looked at the woods near my house and I was like, you know, maybe we should go into the woods and we'll wear these cool costumes because like the woods is beautiful. And then I don't know, also like a white dude with long hair on the cover of every album gets boring after a while, you know.
Yeah.
Is that like your spirit animal? Is that why she chose it? Or
I don't know why she chose it, but it's just funny because when you take the hat off, it's actually a pretty scary mask. But once you put the hat on, something about it makes it a little more laid back.
So I gotta say one thing. I'm having a flashback to you when we talked to you like 9 years ago, and we're sitting this close to you then, and I remember like your fingers were on that fretboard the whole time, even when you're talking, and you're doing the same thing right now.
Oh, yeah,
so nothing has changed really from it.
I got, if I'm aware of it, I'll stop. But like, I have a song I wrote for the Sadies. It sings about my left hand's got a permanent air guitar tick. But don't confuse it with a crutch, because I like it a lot. My left hand's
got a permanent air guitar tick, but don't... Yeah, the Sadies, man, what a great band. Tough news about Dallas.
Real tough news about Dallas. Nobody saw that coming. That's brutal. They're the greatest live band I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, Travis is the older brother, and Sean and Mike, they're still playing as the Sadies. I'm going to sit in with them at Winnipeg Folk Festival. But, yeah, they're my brothers. They're incredible.
Yep, absolutely. Well, we want to talk some more about your music and your new album and your collaborations, but I think it would be perfect time for you to play a song for us if you so desire.
Sure.
What do you want to play?
I'll play my song, Mount Airy Hill, which is the neighborhood I live in Philly where the woods are, that you can see on the album cover and stuff. Okay.
Standing on top of Mount Airy Hill, thinking about flying. Well, been around, but now I'm gone. Been gone. But now I'm going down. I was flying high through the night when the morning came, but I was gone, if you know what I mean. I was around, but now I'm gone. Been done down, but now I'm just way down low. Watch my moves, it do the snake and the grass, it do the wiggle it around, now way down low. Been around, but now I'm gone. Been gone, but now I'm just away gone. Been around, but now I'm gone. Been gone, but now I'm way gone. So thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Love those looper pedals, Kurt.
I wasn't playing any loops.
He's just got six hands.
Four hands.
Mount Airy Hill, parentheses, way gone.
Way gone.
I've been interviewing artists for 40 years. I just figured that out. And I've never asked, when do you decide that your song title gets a parenthetical?
This is a good reason. Well, my album title is parenthetical.
The entire, like, there's no title.
Lowercase and parentheses. Yeah. It makes it pop. That's kind of the way I talk, or even in the text world. Or what, you know, I wrote my whole life, but I do like the way things look. Lowercase and parentheses. It's like an aside, but also it's pretty bold. You can't miss it, sort of, in a weird way, even though it's sort of meant to be an aside. But the reason I put way gone in the parentheses is because I wanted people to know that I'm like, been gone, but now I'm just a way gone. It's sort of like, I just wanted them to know I'm saying way gone.
You
know?
Yeah. All right.
Well, when you write lyrics, it seems like a stream of consciousness. Like it's almost like being made up on the spot. That's always the impression I get when I listen to your records. And I'm not saying that as sort of a negative. It's kind of cool because I know there's a lot of work that goes into it, but you make it feel very in the moment, very spontaneous.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it long enough that I sort of, when I'm really feeling it and the lyrics come fast, you kind of have the brain open, you know, it's like for things to fly in. It's like in the early days before I knew what it was, like some of my favorite best songs were written, you know, really fast, like Freeway in Mind, which is like track one off of my first album. Came really fast. I was like, it sounds so familiar. I must have stole this from Tom Petty or something, you know, but I didn't.
I got a freeway in mind. Let go of my head. Walk down my line. Better be sure you'll be dead. I got a trumpet.
When you're in the zone, it happens fast because it's you're in your element at that time, you know.
It was interesting. I sort of think of Jay Maskus as a kindred spirit, you know,
yeah.
And I asked him about his lyrics, and he goes, oh, I never think about them. I'm just like, I'm desperate to come up with that. I just, you know, come up with anything at the last minute. They're not really that important, but it seems like that's not the case with you.
Well, that's also Jay being Jay, but, you know, who I love. But, you know, he's had lyrics throughout my teen up to now that's definitely touched me. Sure, he loves to play guitar solos more. You know, maybe at the end of the day, he writes those last minute. But with me, it's especially nowadays, there's no rules. Like sometimes I'll just be driving in the car and hear like a song on the radio that's getting me pumped up and makes me think up some lyrics. Or I'll just pick up a guitar and lyrics will come. Or I also like a lot when I'm not writing now. I used to like wander. I used to be like, man, what? Am I washed up or am I having writer's block? But I like not doing it too. So I think it's just about being present. Whatever you're doing, just get into it. Even if it's like I'm doing nothing, I'm like, I'm really into doing nothing right now. You know?
Be here now.
Yeah.
It's funny to hear you say writer's block because depending on how you count, this is your seventh, eighth, or ninth solo album. Mm-hmm. Like everybody who reviews it has a different number, right?
I like that.
Yeah, you know, because there's also so many collaborations, and do we count the record with Courtney Barnett? You've been prolific throughout. You've also said you have three albums worth of stuff that didn't make this one, which is almost a double album.
Yeah, okay, I might have said that. And it's true. I don't know if it's really three albums, but of course, at the end of the day, songs that don't make the album, wouldn't be too smart to put that on three albums, you know, because
yeah.
They didn't make the first album.
When you write as often as you do and record as much as you do, how do you know when you have one that's a keeper?
When you got, what, a song?
Yeah.
You just know.
Yeah.
Everybody knows in the room. That's the beauty, because I got to earn it again every time, every record, you know, there's a moment where it's like, well, on the previous album, that's why I would go in straight from being on the road, so you get over all that rust. You don't even have it. You just go in right. there and kind of have the mojo working. But yeah, I feel like every album there's a moment where finally that first song happens, which, and you just know it's undeniable. And then same with my home studio, the first song that was really magic in the home studio that came out as a song, Mount Airy Hill, actually, the song that I just played. Everybody in the band just has one simple part. It was just the Violators, and it was in my drummer Kyle came up from Athens, Georgia, and everybody was there, and we just heard it back in the speakers, and he said, "Oh, it looks like we're going to get away with this one," and that's my drummer. So, you know, if your drummer says that, you know you got some kind of hit.
But it's interesting that you say that your band is kind of like, you're using them as a sounding board too. It sounds like you're not just like, oh, I've got a winner here. It's like you want to hear what everybody has to say.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not like I asked him, but he said it because, you know, because it was true.
It is true. That's a beautiful song. And I was thinking, you know, that falsetto stuff is just, when you're writing something like that, is that just there right from the get-go, or is that sort of evolve over time of playing those chords? And
well, I grew up on bluegrass from my dad, and, you know, that's like that bluegrass style sort of yodely falsetto.
Yeah.
And for the last 5 years or so, I've been obsessed with country music. I like the Staples through my dad, but then I was getting deeper and deeper in it. And then Ken Burns' Country Music Doc came out, and I was obsessed basically with Hank Williams and things like that. I have a notebook of this whole record, and the front of it, there's just a note. It just says, got a yodel. You know? and then that's where it came together for that song.
Yeah, that's cool. You want to play another one for us?
Yeah, sure. All right, this one, there's no loops on this one. This
is no loops. Tell us what you're going to play, Kurt.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to play Flying Like a Fast Train. This is a... Okay.
Fast train, I don't feel a thing. Till when I pull into my station, I just crash and burn, yo. Playing in the music room in my underwear, feeling finer than my psyche crumble, pell-mell stumble. I've been bamboozled, better watch out, cause we got vampires lurking. Flying like a fast train, I don't feel a thing. Till when I pull into my station, I just crash and burn. Wall right then. Flashback, flying saucers, black coffee, pink lemonade from the faucet, seeing dragons, but they're so pretty, baby, come on, let's go tear up the city. No, think we better slow it down. Flying like a fast train, I don't feel a thing. Till when I pull into my station, I'll just crash and burn, yup. Cooped up, creature of discomfort, can't touch a thing. So I take a walk round the block, then I come back and sing. Say what's wearing you down, kid, we'll try a little out of everything. So, flying like a fast train, I don't feel a thing. Till when I pull into my station, I just crash and burn.
Thanks.
That's Kurt Vile performing Flying Like a Fast Train live at the Goose Island Brew House. After a short break, we'll have more songs and conversation with Kurt Vile. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. And we're back. We're talking with Kurt Vile at the Goose Island Brew House. Let's jump back into the conversation.
You know, you're not the sort of person, Kurt, that takes it for granted. I love where this album starts, you know, opening with going on a plane today, right? Like, oh, man, I get to fly, right? And it gets better and better and better. You're thinking about being a kid, listening to Neil Young for the first time, Heart of Gold, and then never imagining you would have the opportunity to open for him in front of 80,000 people.
Yeah. But guess what? Now I do know that it, and then I'm just like, yeah, of course. No, that was amazing. That was surreal. And what I love about Neil Young is that he always Neil, but then he always gets some kind of resurgence. And that was like his most recent resurgence, where he got Promise of the Real to back him up. These young kids, you know, a couple of Willie Nelson's sons and their band, and they so energetic and soulful backing him up, you know. Sort of like when Neil Young in 89, you know, a couple years before punk, quote-unquote, broke, and he's got Rocking in the Free World, you know. He's just always ahead, and yeah, so we did it. We opened for Neil, and then I put it in a song. Yeah.
Listening to Heart of Gold, gonna open up for Neil Young. Man, life can sure be fun. Imagine if I knew this when I was a young.
In terms of your own career, because every time I've talked to other people about you, they always say, what a chill guy, laid back, never a handful or anything like that. He's got no ego.
That's not true.
And then I go, like, the amount of work that you do, it, you know, it's kind of the opposite of that. Your work ethic, like you, Jim was mentioning the number of studio albums. I just counted up the EPs. It's 18 EPs. And then there's all these, like, I mean, where did that come from? Because it seems like you're constantly thinking about music, making music. Even during the pandemic, you were recording all this material. And it sort of belies the way you present yourself in public. Like, oh, he's not that super driven guy, you know, type A personality or anything like that.
Wow. I'll tell you, one thing is that I'm just a huge music fan and I'm obsessive. And I was lucky to grow up in the 90s and be into indie rock, where 7 inches were $3 and people are putting out cool EPs. You know, Pavement, one of my favorite bands growing up, but a lot of those indie bands were putting out cool EPs. And yeah, so I started putting out EPs on the side pretty much right away. I think I've always just been obsessive. I mean, I don't think, I know. And I make music for obsessive people, you know? It's like a vicious cycle.
So this is a therapy session,
these,
is what
these
this
people
is.
People are all supposed to be at work right now, so yeah, they're obsessed too. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I have this aversion, phobia, allergy to Bruce Springsteen.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's fine.
Having grown up in Jersey, right?
Yeah. You know, don't worry, we all have our flaws.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's all right. We've had this fight for 17 years, but I love your Springsteen cover.
Wages of sin, you keep me paying. Wages of sin for the wrongs that I've done there. Wages of sin.
What made you go to that song, Kurt?
Well, I had actually tried to do a version of that song with the Violators far back as 2007. At the time, even Adam from War on Drugs was in the Violators. I just love how Springsteen, you know, there's a reason they call him the Boss, is because he does have a whole albums of great material on the cutting room floor. He gets real obsessive. But look, I'm also with you. Like, it's not like I listen to Springsteen every day. I consumed him hard in the 20s. But he's like a member of the family. Like, I don't talk to everybody in my family every day, but when you do, it's you remember, you know, you'll hear Independence Day and you'll want to call your dad on the phone, or The River, you know, could really crush you. The song The River, I mean.
Yeah.
I don't mean the whole album. even though it's a masterpiece. Maybe you don't want to always hear that saxophone blaring in your ear every second.
Yeah, but I get tired of that sax. And you got to admit, the production on Born in the USA sucks.
Yeah, but no, I still love that album. I see what you mean, especially if you've heard it in that era.
You know, I was like listening to Wire in 82,
yeah, that,
83.
Well, that's, yeah, of course. If you're listening to Wire,
yeah,
I understand where you're coming from. But anyway, that song in particular, it's a good exercise to play a deep cut in the studio to get in the zone. I have a few of those deep cuts that I made mine. I knew it was just a masterpiece and beautiful and dark, and that I should grab it before somebody else does. So now it's mine.
I dig your version.
Thank you.
You mentioned Pretty Pimpin'. It's a song many people love, and I know you're going to play it for us. How did this one come together before you play it?
Yeah, this one came together. I was talking about my producer, Rob Schnapp, who he was the only producer on this record aside from two people, my buddy Adam and Ted Young, and who live in Philly now. They were my engineers in Philly, so they helped produce. But Rob Schnapp is in L.A., and when I started Believe I'm Going Down, I started that record just within the band. My bandmate Rob Laxo was recording, and my drummer Kyle was recording. And after a certain point, I hit a wall, and we were out in L.A., you know, sort of directionless. And then Rob Schnapp got in touch with Chris Lombardi at Matador, and he said, I'd like to work with Kurt. And I realized he was the guy who, you know, started Bong Load, the label with Beck, did Mellow Gold, which is a huge record for me as a kid. It turns out he's the guy who recorded Black Hole, which is like one of my favorite Beck songs. And anyway, he was just going to help mix the record, but that's the way it works. This is the way it works. I went home to Philly. I wrote Pretty Pimpin', you know. It's a simple, hypnotic sort of earworm or something. And I was like, all right, well, let's start by recording a song. And I did, you know, my friend Stella plays drums on it. My bass player, Rob Laxer, would play bass on it. But we just went in there, recorded it, and we booked like 2 weeks to mix, and we ended up just recording that song all week, you know. I mean, it was basically there, but we kept adding things to it, and it just turned into my only hit song, I guess, for now. So that's why I said that. I want to play this for you just so you know I'm that dude who wrote that hit song. People, the listeners.
Well, we don't have to dumb it down. You can go as deep as you want. You know.
No, I'm just trying to get as big as possible.
Well, now you have to. You're on a major label. You got to, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, you want to hear it?
Well, you know, to help you get big, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You ready?
Silly me, that's just me. Then I proceeded to knock on some yeah, never was my style. But I couldn't tell you what the hell it was supposed to mean, cause it was a Monday, not Tuesday, not Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday came around and I said, who's this stupid clown blocking in the bathroom sink? But he was sporting all my clothes, I got to say, pretty pimpin'. Always a little too cute to be a minute under marbles lost. He was always a thousand miles away, standing in front of your face. Then he woke up one morning, didn't recognize the boy in the mirror. Laughed, said, silly man, that's just me. Then I proceeded to brush some stranger's teeth, but they were my teeth and I was way less. Quivering like a leaf come in the window of a restaurant. I couldn't tell you what the hell was supposed to mean, cause it was a Monday, not Tuesday, no Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday came around. I said, who's that stupid clown like in the bathroom sink? But he was sporting all my clothes, I gotta say, pretty pimpin'.
Thanks.
Pretty Pimpin', Kurt Vile.
I have this one quick funny story to tell about when I played this song on Conan O'Brien when it just came out. My youngest daughter, she was really young, and they were watching it. And, you know, I say, Saturday come around, and then I said, who's this stupid clown blocking the back room, bathroom sink or something? And then she looked over at her older sister, like all sincere. And my bandmate next to me is Rob, and she's like, Rob's a stupid clown. Like, she had it figured out. I don't think she knew what stupid was. She was like,
yeah, there you
Rob's
go.
A stupid clown.
Yep.
That's great. It's funny what you were saying about, you know, I want to be big, joking around about that, but I think there's some element of truth when you devote yourself to something this big, music. What were the ambitions? You know, you started in this place that was very modest and putting out, you know, lo-fi recordings that people loved. Did you envision yourself signing with a major label and selling out three nights at a major theater in a big city in the Midwest? I mean, was that sort of in the cards? That's what you wanted. That was the long goal.
Well, I knew I wanted to do some version of that. I don't know. You know, I didn't know if I would ever sign to a major label. I mean, I know there are a major label, and I'm stoked, but it's still somewhere cool and in between. I feel like I'm always going to be a little in between, but I want to get, you know, as big as I can be, all those kind of things.
Well, it seems like you've been able to do it without compromising. Like I don't think you've ever put out a song that felt like he's doing something else,
like, know, trying to sound commercial. Cool. I do. It's funny too. Thanks a lot. They're all compliments. I am really obsessed with a lot of modern pop music lately, though. It's like a whole new art form, and it's
like
really,
what are you thinking?
Like Charlie XCX or that song "Juicy Juice" by Doja Cat. I can't get that stuff out of my head. It's dangerous.
Is that because of your daughters?
Well, that artist Kesha, she wanted to write some songs with me. We did, so I definitely heard Kesha's music, but I had to still research it. And Tom Sharpling, actually, he told me all his favorite songs. But anyway, she was sort of a gateway. And my daughters did get into Kesha, but no, I don't know. Like the Charlie XCX thing, that's everywhere. It's dangerously good.
You got to look into this TikTok thing.
I know that's
maybe
the new, that's what. I better not get into that. But maybe I should have some people take care of it.
Yeah, there you go.
We got to wrap this up. But we appreciate everything.
Thank you, Kurt Vile. Thank you, Goose Island Brew House. Thanks, everybody, for coming out.
Thanks a lot.
That's it for our session with Kurt Vile. To see videos of his performance, visit our website, soundopinions.org. But now we want to hear from you. Share your thoughts on Kurt Vile in a voice message at our website so we can play him on the show. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, some spooky movie music highlighted by an interview we did with the great horror movie maven, John Carpenter.
Great director and great musician. Yeah,
that's right. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast where we add new songs to the Desert Island Jukebox.
You love Halloween.
I do, I do.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo, and our Columbia College intern is Lauren Holt. We had help on Kurt Vile, the event at Goose Island, from Adam Yaffe, Justin Tivet, and Columbia College students Abra Richardson and Ryan Stetzer. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott.